class last week, we derived the gauge transformations. Let us call it gauge invariant. So we derived quantity epsilon g, which we showed was gauge invariant, epsilon plus 3h e naught plus p naught chi. By the way, like, I want to ask, because I know Neil has covered a lot in 4 lectures, do you think I should increase the pace accordingly to his pace, or we should stick to our original pace? I don't want to decrease your momentum. What do you say? Mic is on?
No.
Okay. Okay, keep my own speed. I thought like you were saying, you were reminding me mic is on. Okay. So we showed that this epsilon j is gauge invariant. Then the second thing which we showed was epsilon m. Epsilon minus 3 h psi, where this psi is Bardeen psi, is also gauge invariant. And we showed that epsilon g is equal to E in zero, in the Newtonian gauge, or the zero shear gauge. And then we found that this is equal to E in co-moving gauge. So I gave you a homework that to find psi g and psi m. So the answers, I hope like you guys get the, we get the same answers. So one is psi e plus p naught chi, which is very similar to this. And this is gauge invariant object. And psi g is psi in zero shear gauge. And then we had the second exercise, which was to find psi m, which is minus epsilon by 3h. You guys got the same answer? Okay, very good. And then this psi m is psi in uniform density gauge. So did you guys spend some time on different gauges, or we just stuck to synchronous gauge? Just synchronous? Not even Newtonian gauge or the zero shear gauge? No? Okay, don't worry, we'll do that. We are going to do now in the next 2 lectures. Like, I'll just give you a flavor of different gauges and how some things can be simplified. So I also introduced to you a zeta, which is a gauge invariant object. So this zeta is defined as phi plus epsilon 3 e naught plus p naught. Okay, so now there is a cautionary remark here. So if you look at various books, they will also have a zeta, but that is not this Bardeen zeta. This is the original zeta. What those books have, so this is a, let us call it zeta b, for zeta Bardeen. And we showed that this is again a gauge invariant object. This gauge invariant. Then there is another quantity which is R, which is the curvature perturbation on the co-moving orthogonal gauge. And this R is defined as phi plus h psi E naught plus P naught. This was the original definition. This was defined by Lith. So let us define it as zeta L. This is the zeta you will see in most of the books. This is not the original zeta. Okay. We'll come back to this tomorrow. What this, there are analog definitions of that. So this is the curvature perturbation if psi is 0, which is the co-moving gauge.
because the velocities of the matter fluid will be zero. And this is the curvature perturbation in when epsilon is zero in the uniform density gauge. So did you guys do this relation that in conformal time, if you take conformal time, then psi is a E naught plus P naught V minus beta. You must have been told how to go from psi to velocity. But did you see this? Or was it shown how to get this? Okay. So I will do it very briefly. It is very straightforward to see that why this psi is related to velocity. It essentially comes from a team union. So if you write team union, and team union has this U mu union, right? So if you identify your UI as V, and then you look at T0i component, and then relate psi with the T0i component, you will immediately see that this relation is true. And this is the heart of that relationship between relating body in psi with velocity. And I know, like Neil introduced theta through divergence of velocity, and if you remember, this also comes through divergence in J, right? So that is why these quantities are interrelated. One can explicitly show, maybe he gave you a physical intuition how they are related, but we can see that explicitly. But okay, like I'll just write this relation. I'll need this relation later on, but I just wanted to make a remark. So now let us try to prove something from here. Let us forget about the second one. Let us prove that the claim is that this quantity, zeta, introduced by Bardeen, is conserved on super Hubble scales. Okay, so let us prove it, how it is conserved. So essentially, there is a poor man's way to see it, a very intuitive, a four-line derivation, and there is a more complicated way to see, which we will also do. But let me show you the quick way why this argument works. Okay, so let us first compute. Let me drop this B for a moment, and let us compute psi dot. So psi dot is phi dot plus epsilon dot, and then we will have minus epsilon E naught dot plus P naught dot by 3 E naught plus P naught square. Okay? And then we are going to use some of the equations which we derived. What are those equations? Okay, so now I'm going to put, let us look at equation 41 in Bardeen's paper. And now I'm going to work with N naught equal to 1. We don't need N naught anywhere, otherwise we'll have to just put N naught everywhere. So what we can do is we can just substitute, we can use some relations which we learned earlier. We learned that C squared, the speed of sound, is P0 dot by E0 dot. And if the perturbation is adiabatic, if the entropy perturbation is zero, we learned that this is also equal to pi by epsilon. Okay? So that is one thing which we are going to use. The second thing which we are going to use is, so we are going to use two equations. We have to use that phi dot, this is equation 41 of Bardeen, is H alpha minus kappa by 3 minus delta chi by 3. The second equation we are going to use is equation 46. So this is 41. So equation 46 was derived in the class, right? For epsilon dot. Was it derived or was it not derived? Equation 46 was not derived? It was derived? Okay, it was derived. I was told it is derived. Okay, so the second equation we need is equation 46, which is epsilon dot minus 3H epsilon plus pi plus epsilon naught plus P naught kappa minus 3H alpha minus delta psi. So now we can just put in these two equations here and we can see what comes out. So what is going to come out is that if you take psi dot, now if you put phi dot, okay, so let us do it. So we'll have H alpha minus kappa by 3 minus delta chi by 3, and then we will have epsilon dot divided by 3 E naught plus P naught. So we'll get first term as minus H epsilon plus pi E naught plus P naught. That's the first term. Then we will get plus of kappa minus 3H alpha by 3. Then we'll get a minus delta psi by 3. And then we'll get the last term, minus epsilon from here. And I'm going to write it as E naught dot 1 plus P0 dot by E0 dot. And then I'm going to write this term as 3 epsilon naught plus P naught and this. So this is what we will get if we just plug in all these equations here. And then what happens is that this, all these terms cancel. And we are just left with four terms. There's a delta chi term, delta psi term, and then this term, and then this term. Okay? Okay, so your exercise for the tutorial is that if the perturbation is adiabatic, okay, then these two terms cancel. If the perturbation is adiabatic. If the perturbation is not adiabatic, these two terms in these circles will not cancel. If the perturbation is adiabatic, these two terms will cancel. It is very easy to show. Because if the perturbation is adiabatic, then this term is Cs square. You have to just use a continuity equation. You will get an H. You will get rid of the minus sign. And then this will cancel with this if you take out Cs square from here. It's trivial. One line. So what we get then with this is very poor man way to show the things about zeta dot, but what we get is that zeta dot then is just sum of two terms. It's just minus 1 by 3 delta chi plus delta psi. That's all. Okay. And now if the perturbations are of the form that which satisfy delta, so let us say we have a perturbation of the form delta plus some wave mode k square some perturbation q equal to 0, which is the perturbation is of the, if we have a flat universe then they are the plane wave form, then these deltas are proportional to k square. So essentially what we are looking at is something proportional to k square times the perturbation. This chi is n psi, chi plus psi, d pi square. Okay? And if k, which is the wave number, which is the inverse of the wavelength, if k is very small, if k goes to 0, that is we are looking at wavelengths which are larger than the super Hubble scale and so on, then our zeta dot goes to 0. So our zeta is conserved on the larger scales. It's a very quick way to see. We have done essentially nothing. We have just taken a dot, put the equations which we had derived, and we found that zeta dot goes as k square, because there is a delta here. And then if you're looking at the longest wavelengths, then this zeta dot is very small quantity. Okay? So that is why zeta is conserved on the larger scales if the perturbation is adiabatic. If the perturbation is not adiabatic, then it is not true, because then we will have an extra term sitting here which will not go to zero. Okay, so any questions so far? Okay. Now let us go ahead. And now what I'm going to do is I'm going to maybe I should show you how it comes first. This psi as V, because we are going to need it. But I thought it was done in class, isn't it? Like the how Bardeen psi is related to the velocity of the fluid. Okay, we'll do it now. I'll give you a very quick outline of what is to be done, okay? If you want, you can do this exercise. But is this clear, or is this trivial? Trivially clear? It's very simple, actually. The more sophisticated way to see this, we'll also see how to, because here we're essentially taking a limit. We are not comparing with Hubble radius, right? We'll do that. We'll write down a second order equation for Bardeen's potential when we do, we'll quickly do the gauge invariant way, and then we will see like how it automatically tells us you have to compare with Hubble if you're, we'll do it for R, not for zeta, so that we have some variety. But there we will see that if the anisotropic stress vanishes, if the perturbation is adiabatic, then if you compare, we'll get a term like k square by h square, and then we will see how it comes out. Okay, so what I want to do is I want to just tell you how psi is actually related to beta, because then I will recast the equations in some form. Okay, so we most of the time, and I think Neil also covered in conformal time, right? Not the proper time. All his equations were in conformal time? Or sometimes they shifted. Okay, so let us go to conformal time for a moment. So let us recall that T mu nu in the unperturbed space-time is rho plus P U mu U nu plus P G mu nu. Okay, and now we are going to work in conformal time, everything in conformal time now, and this is very easy to translate from what we did earlier. So now we can write down a perturbed delta T mu nu, and that is delta rho plus delta P, and then we can call the background quantities with a bar, U bar mu, U bar nu. And then we'll have a delta of P of G bar mu nu. And then if you do this perturbation, then you will get 2 rho plus P. I should write this as bar plus bar, U bar. So you can show that this is true from if you just perturb it, okay? Delta U nu, and then you will get the what is this quantity? Okay, so then you will get this other term, which is plus P of delta G mu nu plus A square P of pi mu nu. So this pi mu nu is the anisotropic stress this is in the more conventional notation. And this pi mu is related to the sigma, which we have in Bardeen. If you look at equation number.
So most of the authors call this quantity as pi mu. So this pi mu is the, if you look at equation 35C about Sij, then this pi mu is essentially d mu d nu minus 1 by 3 delta mu nu of sigma. Okay, these are the last two terms in equation 35C. Okay, so let us derive the relation between psi and v. It is very, very simple how to do that. So for that, we first can see what is our u bar mu. So our u bar mu, if we have a conformal time, that means lapse is a. So we had written these expressions earlier, so just put a for the lapse. So this quantity is defined, this is the background u mu vector. And from here, and the metric, you can check that these relations are true. I'm just writing them. This is very easy to show that all these relations. So this is the background u mu. This is the background covariant vector in u mu. And then you can write down that the perturbation in delta u mu is minus alpha vi, where this vi is a perturbation in the spatial velocity of the fluid. So there is a four velocity of the fluid, u mu, and we are just writing it in terms of we are looking at its perturbation. Okay? So there is a temporal component which depends on the lapse, and the spatial component which we call vi. Okay? And similarly, one can find the delta u mu is a minus alpha vi minus beta I, where beta was our shift vector. So you can start from here, from these two, and the way we always computed the perturbation using the metric, you can compute delta u mu and delta u mu down, and you will find these answers. And then we want to see what is delta T0i, because that is what will give us relation for psi. So the first thing which we can see is that, so we recall that we had, the Bardeen had defined delta T0i. So delta T0i was our ji. So if you look at equation 9, and if you look at equation 35b, so if you combine equation 9 and 35b, then you will see that delta T0i is actually for lapse equal to a, is 1 by a di of psi. And then you can show that delta of T0i from here is minus a of di psi. Okay? You can show this. And then what you can do is that you can find from here. So this is one expression. So just using equation 9 and equation 35b in Bardeen, we can see that delta T0i, if we choose n equal to a, which is in the conformal time, delta T0i is this. This is independent of this. This is just from Bardeen's paper. Now, we can also find delta T0i from here, okay, for this fluid. And you can show, well, maybe this can be our exercise to show. that this delta T zero I is actually, okay, I have to do one more thing. Since we are doing scalar perturbations, not any general perturbation, our VI, we are going to define for the scalar perturbations as DI of V. So this is what Neil must have introduced. This is the theta, perhaps, which he introduced. This is the divergence of the velocity. Okay? This is by definition. So we are going to, our perturbation in the spatial velocity of the fluid is going to be defined by the divergence of this V, which is a scalar. Okay? So the claim is that if you start from here, and if you just plug in these things, this is very easy. In 2-3 lines, you can show that this is minus A square E naught plus P naught DI of V minus beta. So DI of V minus beta, because we will essentially get terms like this, and there's a VI, which we write as DI of V, and this is beta I, which is essentially DI beta, because beta is a scalar. So you will get this thing. You will get one from here, from perturbation in T mu nu. You will get one here, and you will get one here. And now it is clear what is psi. So psi, therefore, is A, E naught plus P naught, V minus beta. If you compare these two. So is it clear how we have done it? It is very straightforward. So essentially, we knew how psi is defined. Psi comes through J, okay, the current. And then we have delta of T0i. And then we just find what is delta of T0i, all indices down. And then we just compute T mu nu and find delta T mu nu from there. And we compute delta T0i. Okay, so now let us use this to get something more interesting. I'm writing in terms, the reason why I'm doing this is because if you look at, I want to come to the stage where the equations we have introduced, we have derived in last 2 weeks, they can be put in the form which are in all textbooks. In none of the textbooks has this Bardeen psi. All of them have V. So that is why it is very important to know how Bardeen psi is actually related to the fluid velocity. Okay? That is the reason we have done this. Because eventually this is going to be useful for us. Okay, so now there is another quantity which we can show is gauge invariant. And it's a very interesting quantity. What you can show, once you have defined V through this, so now you know, now you can think of this as a definition of V given to you. So you know beta, which was the perturbation in the shift vector. You know psi, which was the perturbation in the current. So think of it as V. So you know the transformation properties of beta, you know the transformation properties of psi, you know transformation properties of V now. Or you can independently derive transformation properties of V by knowing that it is the perturbation in the spatial velocity. So what you can show, so this is one exercise which you have to do. The second exercise which you can do, so were you able to finish the tutorials for this week, or they are still hanging around? One tutorial? Neil has given one tutorial for today?
No, but we are supposed to do tutorials.
Okay, but the tutorials which he gave on Monday and Tuesday, have they been finished? Okay. Okay, so this is just like very trivial exercise. I think like maybe I'll just state it, like rather than giving as a tutorial. You can show that this is true. Okay, this is the tutorial exercise for today. So what you can show also in the conformal time is that if I define a quantity V, capital V, which is V plus gamma prime, where prime refers to the derivative with respect to the conformal time, then this quantity is gauge invariant. You have done this? Okay. Then the way to see it is because V, this, you can show that V transforms as V plus L prime, and gamma transform is gamma minus L, basically, if you recall our notation. So this is a gauge invariant object. So most of the textbooks, they write all equations in this capital V, not even in small v. So when we will write in the full, so V is not a gauge invariant object, small v. So we are just introducing this capital V as a gauge invariant object. I think now we are all set to write down the equations in very nice form. So let us start with something which is, slightly non-trivial, which uses this V. Okay, so now I'm going to write down let us find an equation starting from the, so this is just simple algebra now, like there is nothing to be done, essentially. We don't have to derive anything which is very non-trivial. Okay, so let us start with the equation 43 of Bardeen, and now I'm going to shift the, let us start this delta. So let me call this delta, which Bardeen has introduced as delta B. I'll just tell you why I'm calling it delta B. This is delta Bardeen, and then we have this as our equation 43. This is not in the gauge invariant form yet, in terms of the gauge invariant variables, but now we have everything available to us to write it. So Neil must have introduced to you the fact that this delta B, if we write in a more conventional way, this is actually delta by A square. Did he tell you this? Yeah. Okay. And one reason for that is to go back, when we look back in our first week, I told you that the way Bardeen defines this delta is with the H and not with the gamma on the spatial metric. And he absorbs this A square everywhere. So now what we are going to do is, since we want to go to the textbook equations, which we see in most textbooks, we are going to put that A square back. Wherever we see a delta, we'll call it a delta Bardeen. We'll put it standard delta by A square. Okay? So that we know, so that we don't miss any A square anywhere. So now, now we should write it. So let us call it A square. So we have 1 over A square times this. And now we can show that, okay, I want to write this psi using psi g. So we introduce a psi g. We want to write everything in form of gauge invariant variables. At the moment, none of these are gauge invariant variables. Chi is not gauge invariant. Kappa is not. Kappa is perhaps gauge invariant. Psi is not gauge invariant. So let us write it in gauge invariant variables. So let us write psi in terms of psi g. So we'll get a minus 12 pi g psi g. If you use the definition of psi g we just looked at in the class, and then we'll have 12 pi g E naught plus P naught chi from the definition of psi g. And then you can rearrange this equation and you will get, just in one line, that this equation can be written as delta of chi by A square plus kappa and plus 3 minus 4 pi g E naught plus P naught plus C by A square of chi.
equals minus 12 pi g psi g. So this you can show. This is one intermediate step. This is very, very, very simple. And then we can use the, we can find what is kappa. So what was our kappa? So kappa was, so we can use kappa is minus 3 phi dot. This is still in not in conformal time. Minus 3 phi dot plus h alpha minus delta chi. We can substitute this kappa inside this, and then one can see that one gets another step, that this is h alpha minus phi dot plus h dot chi is minus 4 pi g psi g. So this is our momentum constraint right now. And now we want to use the fact that Bardeen's potential number one is phi h phi minus h chi. And the second one is phi a. So what is phi a? So phi a was alpha times minus something. Alpha minus chi dot. So you can eliminate phi dot from here if you take phi h dot, and you'll also get a h dot chi and h chi dot, okay, which you can eliminate from here, from phi a. And then what you will get if you use these two is that you will get phi h dot minus h of phi a is 4 pi g psi g. Okay, so this is your momentum constraint in fully gauge invariant form. This is a, so it is time derivative of one Bardeen potential minus h phi alpha is 4 pi g psi g. So some books will show you in this form. And then you can, now what you can do is, we just derived the relation between psi. So we just showed that psi, if you want to go to conformal time now, this is yet not conformal time. So we just showed that psi is E naught plus P naught V minus beta. If you go to, okay, so this is one thing. And then the second thing is psi g is psi plus E naught plus P naught chi. Okay. So is it clear so far what we have done? It is very straightforward. Okay. Now we are going to use a trick to go ahead and write this psi g in terms of v. Okay. So this is where it will, some an example will come where you may go to a gauge and then come back to the fully gauge independent way. So this is the momentum constraint in the fully gauge independent way. But I want to write still in a different way. So I just introduced to you that if you are, that you can introduce a gauge invariant quantity, which is V, capital V, V plus gamma prime. And now you can write down gamma prime. We can look at what was
our gamma prime. So the way gamma prime is defined through beta, this quantity is V minus beta plus chi by A. If you look at the definition of chi in terms of beta and gamma dot, if you go to conformal time, then you can show this is true. This is just, we are rewriting gamma in terms of chi and beta. Now I want to go to the zero shear gauge. This is all gauge independent. We'll eventually get everything gauge independent, but just for ease of the calculation, I'm going to do that. So now let us go to zero shear. You recall, like when I was discussing these gauge issues with you, I told you that you can do a calculation choosing a gauge, but if you write down in the end in the gauge invariant variables, you are all fine because you know like everything is gauge invariant. So if you go to zero shear gauge, then V is just V minus beta. Okay? And if you go to zero shear gauge, then psi G is just psi. And psi G is then A, E naught plus P naught, V minus beta, which is where there is this is V, capital V. Okay? So now, that is why in this, if I have gone to zero shear gauge, I can rewrite this expression as, and in going in conformal time, prime, phi H prime minus H phi A, where H refers to the Hubble rate in the conformal time. You can, you'll get a, if you go to conformal time, you'll get a factor of, if you go to conformal time, you will get phi H prime by A. So there will be a factor of A hanging around in some fraction, in some terms, and then that combines with this Hubble to give you this curly H, which is the Hubble rate in the conformal time. So if you do that, then you can show that this quantity and this A essentially, this A square, I'll show you why it comes. So you'll get 4 pi G A square of E naught plus P naught. Capital V. So this A square comes because psi has one A, and if I go to conformal time, then I'll be having one A through the denominator going on this side. So that is why there is an A square. So now let us call this E naught and P naught as our standard rho and P. And if you remember the dictionary I gave you, then phi H was minus of the psi of Mukhanov or Weinberg. And phi A was phi. So these are the two Bardeen potentials which you see in the textbooks. So from here, you will get one equation which you can now go and look at any textbook. Is psi prime plus H phi is minus 4 pi G A square rho plus P, because this is our rho and P, E naught and P naught, V. This is the final answer for the momentum constraint. So what we have done is, we started with the momentum constraint. We have just done some jugglery with expressions, which we already knew. We wrote everything in the gauge invariant form, and we got this as an answer. So we can stop here, in principle. But I wanted to go ahead and write everything in terms of what is written in most textbooks. And to do that, we had to take a slight detour to go to zero shear gauge, because it is slightly easy to look at this relationship to cancel some terms. And then we get this expression. And this is in fully gauge invariant form. And we don't care which gauge we use to arrive at this. Yeah. So there are two H. This is A dot by A, if lapse is 1, which we use so far. And this H is A prime by A. And this H is A times H by definition of, you can show this, this is trivial.
half line exercise. This curly H is the Hubble rate in conformal time. So you can now repeat this exercise for all the equations. Most of the equations you don't even have to use this much energy to derive. And then you will get the required answers. So for example, okay, so now what is the, so in principle I can do all of them, but I don't see a point in doing such an exercise. I just wanted to give you an example of how it can be done. But now let me tell you the answers, because we anyway don't have much time left. So this is one, this is the momentum constraint. So let me write to you the basic strategy for all the equations. And I'll give you the hints of how to do it. If you want, we can do it after the class. So if you start with a Hamiltonian constraint, or the energy density constraint, then the energy density constraint, if we go to the right delta, which has an a square, then this is just delta plus 3c, 1 by a square, phi plus Hubble times kappa is minus 4 pi g, epsilon. So epsilon is our definition. By our definition, it's a fluctuation in the energy density. It is delta rho. And most of the authors define a delta, which is by definition delta rho by rho. Okay, so we can write this quantity as just rho times delta here. And then what you can do is that you can rewrite, you can use the momentum constraint, which is 1 over a square delta plus 3c chi plus kappa is minus 12 pi g psi. Then you can rewrite epsilon. From epsilon, you can go to epsilon m, which is, it is epsilon minus 3 h psi. That is why I wanted to use a momentum constraint. And then using these equations, the energy density constraint can be written as delta plus 3c, this big psi, which is the in the Mukhanov notation, as 4 pi g a square delta m, where delta m is defined as epsilon m by rho. This is like very straightforward exercise. You don't have to use any trick here. You just have to substitute. What you have to do is the thing you have to keep in mind is that there is always a matter variable, and you have to write the matter variable in the gauge invariant form. So, but that comes with some combinations like psi or chi and so on, and that is why you have to use an extra equation. And when you use that equation here, then magically Bardeen potentials will appear by their definition, because they mix phi, chi, alpha, kappa, so on. It is very simple. Okay. Do you want I should do it, or? Okay. So similarly, you can look at the trace of the extrinsic curvature. So this is our second equation. This is our momentum constraint. This is our Hamiltonian constraint. You can look in any book and you will find this as the answer. And then one very interesting equation was our traceless part of the, actually, like, we didn't do it. So
we skipped its derivation. But this was this equation, equation 45 from Bardeen. So which had di dj minus 1 by 3 delta ij delta. And then we have chi dot, if you put n equal n not equal to 1, plus h chi minus alpha minus phi minus of 8 phi g sigma equal to 0. And this is very easy to rewrite, because if you look at this bracket here, then this is just chi dot plus h chi minus alpha minus phi. Let us just look at these four terms, okay? And this is essentially, this is equal to, by definition of the Bardeen potentials, minus phi h minus phi a. So this equation essentially gives you that you have some derivatives acting, and then you will have psi in the Mukhanov notation minus phi equal to the anisotropic stress, the derivative of the anisotropic stress. Some derivatives acting on 8 pi g sigma. Okay? This is the simplest thing to see. And then the important thing is that if the anisotropic stress vanishes, then two Bardeen potentials are equal. Then psi is equal to phi. Okay? So that is the other equation which you will see in the gauge invariant form. Okay, so what is left now? Another thing which you can, okay, let us do the matter part, because this is slightly non-trivial. So do you have any questions here? Is it clear, or you have no questions today? Is it too fast? Is it very slow? It is adiabatically slow? Or it is too entropic?
Sorry. You know, you're saying about where the anisotropic stress goes. This is not a gauge invariant thing. So what's your final gauge invariant?
Sorry? Oh, yeah, that's a very good point. This is the... Yeah, because I didn't do that.
Yeah, but I mean, what you just said just now, you said this thing on the right can vanish?
You can write it in a gauge... That's actually a good point. Whether the anisotropic... Oh, but an anisotropic stress was gauge invariant quantity.
Oh, okay.
Right, so...
So that's the...
Yeah, that's the final equation. Okay. You can write it in terms of this... So I just introduced this phi mu nu, right? Just a moment back in d mu nu. So you can, which is defined actually through this, if you look at pi ij, essentially this di dj minus this 1 by 3 delta ij, delta acting on sigma. Okay? So you can write, so the fully, let me write down the final answer in the, if you have taken care of these derivatives. So there is a derivative term acting on this. I'm not writing it here. Okay? And then the fully gauge invariant form, which you will see in many books, is psi minus phi is equal to 8 pi g a square p, this capital phi. And this capital phi is the trace of this phi. Okay? This is what you will see. Which is essentially this. So that if the anisotropic, and this capital phi is gauge invariant, because our sigma is gauge invariant. We proved it. Sigma tilde was sigma. Otherwise, we don't even have a well-defined model. So this is the fully gauge invariant form of this equation. This is our third equation. So if an isotropic, the statement is if an isotropic stress is zero, then two Bardeen potentials are equal. Psi is phi. Which is, and all of our matter which we mostly, most probably all the models of cosmology which we can take are having an isotropic stress as zero. Okay, so now I want to go to the matter equation, but my page is lost. Okay, this is multiplication in formal time. Yeah, we haven't derived some equations nicely. Okay, let us do this first. So now, so what have we done? We did the, so we have written equation 42, equation 43, and equation 45, the three of our gravity perturbation equations in the gauge invariant form. We will do the equation 44, but in a different way. Okay, we will, that will give us, that is the equation which has all the meat of the predictions, but we'll do it slightly afterwards. So now I want to do something in a slightly different notation, and so that we are again at the same level with most of the books. Now we look at the matter equations. These were the gravity part. Okay, so we derived equation 46. So did Neil also derive equation 47? The psi dot equation, or? Okay, good. You should do it. It is good exercise. Actually, in synchronous gauge, it is not so difficult to do. But he derived the fluid equations in full GR, which I skipped, right? Equation 12. Come on. Equation 11 and 12, he derived. Okay, so let us go to, Can I take 5 more minutes? We started late. 5 minutes. Okay. So let us start with the, my claim is that we have derived this, epsilon dot n naught. This is equation number 46 in Bardeen. And this is minus 3h epsilon plus pi plus epsilon naught plus p naught kappa minus 3h alpha. And then there is this delta b. Bardeen's delta. And now we can do a very simple exercise. Let us first forget about this delta Bardeen. Let's call it delta by a square, the standard delta. Then let us divide by, we have to write it in a different form. Yes. So now I'm going to write this pi. If you recall our definition of the entropy perturbation, then this whole bracket, then what we can do is this. We can write this as minus 3h. So just see the definition of the entropy perturbation when we introduced it, P gamma. So the pi is equal to Cs square epsilon plus P gamma. If entropy perturbation is 0, then it is just that. And then let us write this as 1 plus W, because our equation of state is P naught by E naught, and we take out E naught, which let us call it rho, and then we will have the same thing, kappa minus 3h alpha minus delta by a square of psi. And now I want to write the equation. I want to find the equation for delta dot. So this must have been done in synchronous gauge. Delta dot. It was done, right? Okay. But this is the fully gauge invariant form. So if you write down the delta dot, which is epsilon by rho dot, so you have to compute, you have to put this epsilon dot and the rho dot from here, then in 2 or 3 lines you can show that this delta dot is plus 3h C s square minus omega delta plus 3h
omega gamma is equal to 1 plus W kappa minus 3H alpha minus 1 by rho A square of delta psi. So this is, we are not yet writing it in the gauge, fully gauge invariant form, but this is, instead of working with epsilon dot, we are working with a more standard object, delta dot here. And similarly, you can show, starting from the momentum equation, which is 47, which is for psi dot, the psi dot equation, you can show that very trivially, that psi dot is minus 3 h psi minus E naught plus P naught alpha or rho plus P alpha minus CS square delta rho plus P gamma and minus 2 by 3 delta plus 3C P this pi, trace of this pi. So you will see these, if you look at some books, they may not write psi, but they will write the propagation equation for the time variation of the density fluctuation and the momentum fluctuation in this way. Okay? Yes?
I have a question. In the term, the second to last term, the delta rho, or is it delta times rho?
Which term?
The second to last one.
This?
No, the previous term.
This?
The one that has delta rho.
This is delta rho.
Is that?
This is delta rho.
Okay.
This is epsilon.
Okay.
Oh no, delta times rho means nothing. So it is either rho delta or delta rho. So rho delta. So delta rho is epsilon. It is delta of rho. Or the other quantity is rho times delta. But if I will do this, I'm not going to put this here. This is like an operator. So this means delta rho. Anyway, rho delta is also delta rho, right? Whatever. It is delta rho. Rho delta by definition is delta rho. Yeah.
What's capital gamma?
How does gamma come?
What is that?
Because we are just writing, we are not assuming any adiabatic perturbation here. And we are using the definition of gamma. We are rewriting these expressions in terms of entropic perturbations. That's the idea. We are going towards gauge invariant form, and we know gamma is a gauge invariant quantity.
Okay, I just can't remember what gamma was.
Gamma was our entropic perturbation. By definition, it was P gamma was. So you remember, like we had introduced CS here for the adiabatic perturbation as pi by epsilon. This pi is not this pi. Yeah. Small pi by epsilon. This was for adiabatic perturbation. So all you can look at is delta P by delta rho. Okay, and this is rho delta or delta rho. So if there is a deviation from this entropic perturbation, so delta P minus CS square delta rho is by definition P gamma.
Okay.
So this is this. I'm just rewriting in terms of entropic perturbation. This is the standard form you will see in many books. The only thing which you have to do now is to write psi in terms of V, and then we are done. In both the equations. Okay, so let us do for delta dot. Yeah, again we have to go to zero shear gauge. Like this is, zero shear gauge is actually very useful in many of these calculations because you can forget about chi and then, well, you can always do without it, but I found it that it reduced many steps. Especially because if you are in the zero shear gauge, then you can identify phi with one of the Bardeen potential and the other one with the other. So, again, if you go to the, so let us look at this equation. I'll not do the momentum equation because we really don't have any time. So, I'm just going to recast this equation in a gauge invariant form. Yeah. So now, let us just recall that psi, let us work in chi equal to 0 gauge. Just for the simplicity. There is no chi here, but
just for simplicity, we know that psi, we just proved that psi was A, rho plus P, capital B. If we are in the zero shear gauge, and also in the zero shear gauge, you can check that kappa minus 3H alpha is actually minus 3 phi dot of H. The reason is that kappa has a phi dot, and kappa is minus phi dot plus 3H, minus 3 phi dot plus 3H alpha, and the chi term, which is 0 in the zero shear gauge, so these two cancel and we get this, and phi is phi H in the zero shear gauge, so we get this. So this is our block. And then we can just substitute here everything back here. So we will get from here then that we will have delta dot from the first term. The second term is same, 3H Cs squared minus W delta plus 3H W gamma is equal to, we will have kappa minus 3H alpha as minus 3 phi dot H, so we'll get a minus 3 1 plus W of phi dot H, and then we'll have the last term which will be coming from there, so we'll get minus of 1 plus W delta of V by A. Okay, and now we know what is in the zero shear gauge. We had epsilon G equal to epsilon, right? We showed what is epsilon G. So I can go, so this delta by definition was epsilon by rho, so I can define a delta G as epsilon G by rho, which is equal to epsilon by rho in zero shear gauge. Okay, so I can rewrite this equation now in a fully gauge invariant form, and in the conformal time, if I go to delta G prime plus 3 curly H Cs square minus W delta G equals minus 1 plus W delta V minus 3, this Mukhanov's psi prime minus 3 HW times entropy perturbation. We are just rewriting this as this. This is trivial. So similarly, we can write down, you can do the exercise for the momentum, which is slightly more involved because you have to do slightly more, you have to take care of slightly more terms. But if you do the momentum one, then the answer which you get is V prime plus 1 minus 3 Cs square curly HV plus phi, this is phi A, plus Cs square by 1 plus W delta G plus W 1 plus W gamma plus 2 by 3 delta plus 3c W by 1 plus W is trace of this anisotropic stress equals 0. So these are our two matter equations in the fully gauge invariant form. Okay? So here also you can go to zero shear gauge and it simplifies the calculation. But the important thing is that zero shear using any gauge is just a tool. Eventually we write in the fully gauge invariant form all the variables and we are fine. Okay? So I think I will stop here. This finishes our task of writing, of getting to the equations which all the books have. So now you can compare these equations. There may be slight change in the notation from one book to another, but
essentially you have all the meat to look at any physics now. And you can compare with various papers and so on. So what I'm going to do tomorrow is to write the equation for the one equation which we haven't done, this kappa dot equation. Or I will write the equation for psi double prime. Okay? And then we will see how that equation leads to, tells us more about the conservation of the zeta or this Lipps zeta. And if you play with this equation, if we have time tomorrow, if you play with this equation, you can find all the answers which you need for anything. That all these equations will be used subsequently to get to that equation tomorrow. Okay? But if you look at that equation, by solving that equation, you can take radiation, you can take dust, you can take baryons or anything. You can solve them, you'll get a Bessel function essentially as a full solution, and you will get the same behavior which Neil taught you in synchronous cage. Okay, like he did exactly the same thing but in synchronous cage. We are just doing in a full generality now. Okay? And then we'll come back to the point why there is no residual freedom and so on, the different ways. Okay? I think we'll stop there.